Hi, my name is Sarah Stogner. I'm a lawyer and I'm running for the Texas Railroad Commissioner seat on March 1st.
Excellent. Thank you for joining the program here today via the phone line. And you said March 1st, so it's coming up. That must be a primary. And I imagine then you're running under a R or a D. Is that correct?
I am. I have an R next to my name.
A female R. Hey, look at the progressive times we've got in reality. Wow, look at that. Oh, how's it going out there with just that at all? Is it? Are we in the 21st century now, or people are not really taken back by that anymore, or no?
So, you know, it's funny. I mean, when I show up on location, even when I'm fully in fire retardant gear and all of the things I'm supposed to have to be on site, people automatically assume that I'm not supposed to be there a lot of times because I'm a female.
And that's on the oil and gas or the political scene?
Oh, no, that's in the oil and gas, yeah.
You know, I've heard that several times, actually, in the last probably few months out there on the work field. The patriarchal workplace, I guess, is actually what I wrote down in one of my stories that I was written. Boy, look at me. Sunday night, folks. Give us a break here.
It's been a long week.
She's in her PJs. I'm in my sweats. It's just the way it goes. So let's just transition into that, the long week that we've both had. But we'll focus on you since you're the one that's actually the focus of the interview. I noticed there was a no-fly zone that was implemented on one of your LinkedIn posts or your social media posts. And was this something that was already there and you broke the law, or is this something that they implemented afterwards? Or talk to me a little bit about this.
Yeah. So no, that was care of the ranch owner from the ranch that I live on, Miss Ashley Watt. You can go follow her on Twitter. She's the Frack Sand Baroness. But we went and got drone footage with her drone that we used to patrol the ranch here and published it pretty spectacularly on TikTok and LinkedIn, et cetera, Twitter. And on Thursday, the sheriff came out and told us that there was a no-fly zone that was being implemented. And we're in the process of getting public records requests, FOIAs, from the FAA. But the Railroad Commission is exerting jurisdiction, saying that it's either a spill that's so hazardous, if a helicopter comes close, it's going to cause the spray to move. So they're either fraudulently using it to hide what they're doing, or they're acknowledging just how bad this is and you've got toxic brine that they don't want spewing.
Was there a no-fly zone before you posted anything on social media?
No.
So you posted something on social media. The sheriff shows up to tell you that the Railroad Commission informed him that he needed to go out and inform you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Sheriff has the ultimate power in his county. That's why I was curious about that. Because
yep.
I think he could, anyway, so that's interesting. So, wow, boy, you got the reaction of the Texas Railroad Commission and the sheriff based on social media posts, huh?
Absolutely. If people don't think it's powerful, they're clueless.
This morning, when I looked at, we were corresponding through LinkedIn, I noticed that one of your posts you had, day 9. So let's talk about day 9 and the other 8 days, because from my interpretation of your social media campaign you have going, as you're running for the Texas Railroad Commission, which is in the Republican primary March 1st, is that you've been tracking a lot of issues, I guess, really bringing the visual of the issues to the people instead of, the popular version of just, you know, sitting at the end of the bar stool and yelling the issues. You're actually getting out there. That's pretty cool. Are you getting a good response from this?
Well, Jason, I didn't pick that. It picked me. I mean, the entire reason I'm running is because I've been living on this ranch in West Texas since the summer. We had a similar blowout on the ranch where I live. We've been dismissed by everyone from the regulators to the operators. And as an oil and gas attorney representing really good operators, I'm tired of the good operators not getting credit and the bad ones getting away with murder. And enough is enough. So I am not a politician. I have no long-term political aspirations. Seriously, all I want to do is get in, fix the Railroad Commission to help save the energy industry in Texas. Because if we don't fix it, the feds are going to come in and then they're really going to screw it up.
Let's talk about some of the issues that you're having on your ranch then. I didn't realize all these pictures are from your ranch and or from your close by. I thought you were doing like some tour around the state. So let's talk about some of these issues. I did see one of the issues that you're having some accessibility issues with the Railroad Commission itself.
Yes. So the blowout on the ranch where I am happened on June 9th.
Now explain the blowout. Is this like a BP Gulf spill blowout for those? This is going to air on the radio, so I'm going to have to dumb it down a little bit. So explain the blowout.
Yeah. Okay. So the word blowout or well control incident simply means that you've got an uncontrolled flow of fluids that are not where they're supposed to be in the well. Right? That's it. So on the ranch, we had an old oil well that was then converted into an injection well, because what they did was these fields, these are traditional wells. They're old. It's not any of this new fracking that people see. It's old conventional wells that were drilled mostly in the 40s and 50s. And what they do is they go in and they drill the wells and then they inject water, because what happens is for every barrel of oil we produce 6 or 7 barrels of water out here. And so that water has to go somewhere. And back in the 50s and 60s, and still today in a lot of places, what they do is they take that water and they re-inject it into the same formation. And it helps sweep the oil and gas back in, right? So you're essentially recycling the water, you're keeping your reservoir pressure sustained, and you're helping to have a more efficient production. And so back in when they did it here, we have information now that they over-injected millions of barrels. They probably fractured the formations downhole, meaning that they created, you know, spaces in the rock where it shouldn't be. And it starts oil, gas, water migrate pressure from high to low. And then when you don't have good casing, which is the pipe that they put in the hole, and cement, which was how they make sure that the pipe stays in the hole, then you get what's called microannular channeling, and this oil and gas and fluids and pressure finds the path of least resistance. It'll go through holes in cement, holes in casing, and it migrates up. It migrates into freshwater aquifers. And then eventually, if all of that ends up, you know, it finds a pathway to surface where, you know, there's a final pressure release. So what we're seeing right now is a manifestation at surface of serious downhole problems, which we suspect are similar to what we've been seeing on the ranch for the past 7-8 months.
So talk to me a little bit about you as the homeowner then, or the property owner. Is this happening on your property and you're still not getting proper accessibility?
Yeah, I am not the property owner. My friend did.
Okay.
He actually, yep. So a funny story, what we met earlier this year, and she was like, hey, we were going through some personal changes in my family. And so we were moving and all this stuff was going on. And she's like, well, hey, kind of in between, why don't you live in my pool house at the ranch? She's on 22,000 acres here in Ward and Crane counties. And
I'm so jealous of you. I've always wanted to be Cato Kaelin for a week and just live in someone's pool house. Okay. Anyway, sorry. Go on.
Right. So what started out as a temporary stay in a pool house to help kind of clean up some nitpicky surface issues, which is where I got the name Stuffing Box Karen from on LinkedIn, but that's an aside. So anyways, what was supposed to be just a couple of months of me living out here, kind of in a move, and bugging some oil companies to clean up their act, it has turned into basically my entire life's work and training has made me the perfect person to be here and really effectuate change for the energy industry.
It's interesting you say that, because that was what the article in the Oil Man magazine was. I'm on the cover of the Oil Man magazine this month because of that, where I feel like I'm brought into this industry as well because of a lot of the issues you just said, which is the oil and gas industry is not going anywhere, but some of the companies and people might. And there's a little bit of a change happening with some ethics and some individuals and all kinds of different things because this needs to happen. And I've seen it through the media with the internet. I lived the paradigm shift where the internet took out newspapers. They were declaring bankruptcy for the next 10 years. I lived it with agriculture because the grocery store took out the farmer, just like the light switch has taken out the energy worker. So there's a lot of this kind of outside perspectives that are coming in, and they're needed right now. And you seem like you have one. So what is your background? I guess I thought you had an oil and gas background. You're an attorney.
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, because you're very articulate with the information. So you definitely appear like you're knowledgeable. So.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah. So for the past 13 years, my practice has been focused primarily on representing oil and gas operators in negotiating master service agreements, litigating indemnity issues. I did well control blowout, insurance coverage issues. So when an operator has a blowout and they have insurance to cover it, and just like everything else in life, depending on what's less expensive, is it cheaper to hire lawyers and fight about it, or is it cheaper to pay the claim? Well, when you're talking about tens of millions of dollars and very complicated well control issues, oftentimes insurance gets denied, and then you have to fight about it. And so I have learned well control insurance coverage, which means I've had to learn the basics of well control. So I spent a week at Wild Well. I'm supervisor well control certified. You know, I've got my PEC safety card and my TWIC card, and I've done all the training, because you can't litigate something if you don't understand the basics of it from a technical perspective. And so, you know, anytime I had a new case or a new issue, I would have to learn the nuances of that particular issue. And then I just happened to be living on a ranch when an old Chevron well blew out.
Sure. Yeah. Serendipity. You bet.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about some of these different wells and these other things. I just have a couple more questions about this. One, you posted the other day, and the one that you've been trying to engage with the Railroad Commission with, you mentioned it's an injection well. So is there a certain category or term this would be called, type of well?
The well that's currently blowing out?
Yeah, the one that you're referring about too.
So we're still trying to piece together what where this wellbore came from. But
Okay. Based
on, it's not in the Railroad Commission records. And so initially what happened was the well started blowing out. Everyone thinks sometime New Year's Eve evening. So the evening of the 31st sometime. Then on the 1st, the first boots on the ground took video. And I got there on the 3rd. And I heard about it because the landowner that I work with, she went out there and was like, hey, the Railroad Commission was telling the landowner that it was a water well, and the Railroad Commission doesn't have jurisdiction over water wells, right? So it was really amazing that pretty quickly I got on social media and started saying, this is absolutely not just a water well issue. This is obviously tied to oil and gas. And if we don't do something as an industry to respond to this, we're going to have another Wink Sink or a Lake Bomer, which are phenomenons around here from basically ongoing well blowouts of San Andreas wells and salt domes that have collapsed. And we've got toxic brine continuing to flow for 30 plus years.
I was going to ask you about the Railroad Commission position you're running for. I don't know what their connection is with orphan wells or abandoned wells. Go ahead.
Yep. Oh, no, I was going to say, yeah. The Railroad Commission, half of their annual budget goes to plugging orphaned wells, which are wells that the oil and gas operator is now defunct and has left for the taxpayers to handle.
So that's a slippery, by the way, that's a slippery slope, the little definitions they have between orphan well and abandoned well.
Yep.
Because one, the operator's still around, right? They just don't have a profit. No, that's a zombie well. Okay, never mind. I'm learning new terms here. So, okay, go on.
I made up the term zombie well. No, so under Texas law, an orphaned well is.
You made up the term zombie well?
Yeah.
Really? Because my co-host, Sterling, who grew up in Saudi Arabia, he's the one that brought that news story to me. About the zombie wells, yeah.
Wait, there's a news story about zombie wells?
There was a couple years ago. Yeah, last year, I think.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
there
maybe
Yeah, someone had a story about it, and they define zombie wells as basically it's an upside down house. Basically, yeah, it's an upside right. down house, and the and everybody's screwed.
So. Yeah. Okay. So I've been using it for these wells that have been plugged inadequately, and now with all of our water injection and all the different things that we've got going on out here, they've become unplugged. And so I started saying, we're going to have a zombie apocalypse. It's just not going to be people. It's wells that are coming back to life.
Okay. So, and that actually might happen then if you're talking about some of these pictures that I've been seeing, because it almost looks like a geyser.
Yeah, it is. It's a geyser.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about what you're going to do for the Railroad Commission then. You're obviously very much involved, boots on the ground, literally passionate. You've got friends and family involved in it. You've got a background in it. You've got a pedigree that's pretty good, not only in the oil and gas industry, so you'll understand the dynamics of the Railroad Commission, but your Esquire suffix means that you're attorney. I don't know. Is that even a thing? Do you guys do Esquire? I love Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures, so I've been using Esquire since I was a kid on a lot of things, but... So, I mean, you're extremely qualified. Talk to me about your platform. Let the people know about, you know, what it is that you're going to bring to the Railroad Commission, because there's pipelines, and I think they actually oversee the railroad too, don't they? That monopoly?
Yeah, thanks. So the Railroad Commission was started in the late 1800s to actually address the monopoly problem with the railroads.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding is that through that, the oil and gas industry really started going in the early 1920s. That turned into, okay, they're lumping them all together to help fix essentially the rule of capture issues of who could stick a hole quicker right into the ground. And so, but as of 2005, the Railroad Commission in Texas has nothing to do with railroads anymore. They only regulate oil and gas and then surface mining and the cleanup associated with those.
I forgot. They do not represent the railroad anymore. That's right. I keep forgetting that because that's the irony behind the name.
Right. And I think they like that you forget, right? We went to the rodeo last night in Odessa and stopped at Hooters for some wings beforehand. And I went and introduced myself to some people. And I asked every single person that I could if they knew what the Railroad Commission did. And of a survey of about 80 people at the Odessa Hooters, 3 knew what the Railroad Commission did.
By the way, I took a picture of that Odessa Hooters, which is right next to Hobby Lobby. I love that because that's America, baby. That's America right there. You got the Hobby Lobby next to Hooters. It's like having Twin Peaks next to Chica Fila or Chick-fil-A. You know what I'm saying? Okay.
Yes, the dichotomy is not lost.
No, it's not, especially out there. We got like 4 business people out there laughing because they understand those business models that those individuals have. So closed on Sunday, folks. Okay.
Right.
All right. Let's see what else do we got going on here. So what's in store for you then? I mean, what do you want the people to know that you're going to bring to the commission?
Yeah. So I want people to know that I'm going to bring transparency, right? There's 3 spots. So it takes 3 people to vote. You need a majority. I'll be 1 of 3. So I promise to bring transparency. I promise to try to help work at keeping the bad operators accountable and helping those that are doing the right thing. I know that they're out there helping ensure that they have the incentives and the freedom, right, to let innovation from smart lawyers, from not lawyers, right? Lawyers get in the way, from smart engineers and geologists to tackle the problems. We've got the rules that are on the books now are pretty much sufficient. There's a couple that I would probably tweak, but for the most part, it says, you know, you've got to have mechanical integrity downhole, you've got to protect our fresh water, and you can't be releasing bad stuff onto the ground or into the air without a really, really good reason. And I think that that's pretty sufficient. Now, if you let bad guys get away with it, you know, then there's no teeth and there's no incentive to comply. And right now, operators are about as afraid of the Railroad Commission as you and I are of the meter maid. It's a slight inconvenience. And that's not the way it should be. They have really a really important function in protecting the people of Texas, but also in helping ensure that Texas oil and gas can continue to help make you know, energy great here. I mean, Texas energy is imperative. So I want to help the oil and gas industry. I want to help those that are doing the right thing. And we need to be intellectually honest, because if we don't fix it from inside, then the feds are going to come in and really screw it up. I can't stress that enough. We saw it in Oklahoma with Cushing. They will shut us down. So we got to get these earthquakes under control. You know, we got to get our water management under control. We shouldn't be flaring. We can be doing things like mining Bitcoin and all kinds of innovative things if and when the bureaucrats and the crony capitalism gets out of the way. So I am pro land and our rights. I am pro personal property rights. I am pro industry done right. And I look forward to leading Texas into the next era of energy independence.
How would you define a bad operator? You've mentioned that multiple times.
Yeah, a bad operator is one that abuses the system, that doesn't own up to their mistakes and doesn't want to clean up their messes. What we're seeing right now is these majors are getting pressure from Wall Street on ESG metrics, and they go touting that they're green and looking for the next frontier of energy. And meanwhile, they are dumping their assets out here in the Permian to small mom and pop operators who have no idea of the known subsurface issues. They lie on paperwork. You know, they're actively lying to my face right now on some things. So it's just really disappointing that you know, these big guys that have a reputation as being the best of the best can really get away with really bad things.
I could honestly say that out of all the industries that I've worked in, some of the more unprofessional behaviors come from the oil and gas industry. And I truly mean that. Like, you know, there's ways of saying no very professionally, but then there's ways of saying no in a demeaning, degrading way. And, you know, I think that has a lot to do with it, too, because I think a big problem is the transparency. And so if you've got operators that are part of a good old boys network with the politicians, well, what do they care about the people anymore?
Yeah.
And that's honestly what I think the bigger problem is.
Absolutely. Look and do me a favor. I invite all of your listeners to go and research the Craddock family. Tom Craddock is currently the state rep in Crane, Midland. He's been there 50 plus years. He's chair of the Natural Resources Committee, which means that he's in charge of all of the legislation that gets drafted regulating oil and gas. He is a drilling mud sales guy. His daughter is was chair of the Railroad Commission. She's up for re-election in 2 years. She's never had an oil and gas related job. She went to law school, started working for a lobbying firm, and then daddy's cronies got her elected. And they have been running the oil and gas industry in Texas and profiting and making hundreds of millions of dollars while the good people that are actually out here, boots on the ground, trying to do their best, are drinking contaminated water, and this is the thanks we get.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize we've had Christy on the show program, Christy Craddock and Jim Wright and Wayne Christian.
Yeah, they're great politicians, right? They've got the answers, and they'll, you know, shake your hand and smile in your face. We've got this active. Tom Craddock owns working interests in some of the wells on the ranch where I live, where this subsurface blowout is ongoing, and he has refused to answer our emails or calls for help. He was supposed to be in Midland on Wednesday at the Republican Women's Lunch, and I got word today that he canceled because he's sick. Meanwhile, as we've been on this podcast, another reporter was like, "Hey, I'll see you Wednesday. I hear that Craddock's speaking." I was like, "Oh no, he canceled." I've been slaughtering him on Twitter today, and he canceled. Jim Wright was supposed to come visit the ranch on January 12th. When the blowout happened, he emailed Ashley and said, "Sorry, I'm not coming." It's a political suicide to be seen in front of something that's actually ongoing. And to date, they've avoided, you know, some significant press coverage, but it's coming. CBS7's doing a feature presentation on it this Thursday. We've had some other guys that have come out. Digital Wildcatters is doing a video series on the 31.69 barrel spill that Chevron has lied. I mean, it would take hours to go through it all, but I am telling you, my oath as a lawyer and a professional, I believe that there is deep level fraud and corruption at the very highest levels of our state government and at the very highest levels of publicly traded oil and gas companies.
Do you think this is the reason for ESG?
No, I think ESG is a natural movement of the rest of us tired that people aren't considering the environment and social issues in their governing.
See, I've been saying, I've been disagreeing with that, and I'll tell you why. I truly believe that the oil and gas industry has been and could be a leader in the environmental movement because,
I agree.
You can't have renewables without fossil fuels. And if you look back the last 150, 170 years, we as humans have been decarbonizing on our own. So if you take a look at the carbon molecules we've been using as our heat and energy sources, from wood and hay up through whales into coal and crude oil, right now we're at natural gas. And we're talking about 1 to 3 to 4 of these molecules. And we're doing really good. And we've been doing this on our own. Long before the Sierra Club, long before Greta Thunberg came along, we did this as humans. We evolve because this is how we want to make ourselves better as a species, okay? Are we doing it fast enough? Well, to some people, I guess not, but whatever. So, all right, before I got up a little diatribe there, I kind of lost my train of thought.
No, you're right. About whether or not ESG.
So thank you. I actually think the oil and gas companies probably have the E under wraps the best, but it's the S, the social part, because the image. You know, I mean, when the gun shootings and the images were happening with firearms, Walmart actually caved in and made some changes with their business model, and it actually had a positive effect. And so that's an example of the S. I actually think the oil and gas companies are going to have the hardest time with the G because of how intertwined they are with the government. They are so intertwined with the government, they actually have departments called government affairs. There's no other industry that has that. No, there wasn't. I mean, that's how intertwined they are. That's why I think the transparency is such an issue, because they're so intertwined. I have no idea about Christy Craddock and Tom Craddock and that whole deal, but that's the G. That lies under the G. So there you go. I'm going to step down from my oil drum now. You can step up on your oil drum because you're the one actually campaigning. So
no, I don't think we're disagreeing. My only, you know, caveat is I used to believe most oil and gas folks in Texas were trying to do the right thing. And now I realize that that's true for a lot of people, but for those specifically that have been here a really long time and have these old assets, they've been knowingly hiding things and lying on paperwork, and everyone is allowing it. And, you know, for so long it was, oh, well, that's just crap land. It's only worth $1,000 or $2,000 an acre. Well, okay, but that $1,000 or $2,000 an acre land is really good cattle land, and we have beautiful sand, and our freshwater aquifers start at 50 to 100 feet. And if you are truly a conservative and you believe in public and you believe in property rights, the fact that we are essentially having the government subsidize an industry that has gotten very wealthy off of the land out here, They need to fix it. It's just like kindergarten, right? We teach our kids to clean up their messes. We've got to clean up our messes. And anytime you drill down, we have a permanent hole in the ground. And that becomes a conduit for other layers. And it's a pincushion out here. And if we're not intellectually honest, in 50 to 100 years, the Permian Basin is going to be uninhabitable. And it's a reality that I did not understand until I started living in an oil field every day in June and seeing it basically actively unfold and whack-a-mole with blowouts underneath me.
Few minutes left here, and wanted to ask you about the earthquakes. That's another thing you mentioned. We did interview somebody from the Geological Earthquake Center, and they said the earthquakes had to do more with the injections of the water than it had to do with the fracking and anything else. Is that it had to do more with the saltwater injection process and that sort of thing. So talk to me about where you're at with the earthquakes and what your stance is and background and et cetera.
Yeah. So real quick, I'm not an engineer or a geologist. So this is, there are lots of smart people who cannot agree on this, but based on my listening to the experts, I think it is a global water management problem. We are extracting and reinjecting approximately 15 million barrels per day in the Permian. And like I was talking about earlier on water floods, the water life cycle used to be you drill a well and then for every barrel of oil you produce, and that 6 or 7 barrels of water could get reinjected to maintain the essentially equilibrium within that reservoir. Now with the frack boom, it's not that the fracking is causing the problem necessarily, although that can cause problems, especially if you don't have good cement on the backside. It's not so much the fracking, it's the what do we do with the water? Because it's shale, and the reason we're having to frack to begin with is because the water's not flowing, the rock's not permeable like it is in these other older formations, right? So that water has to go somewhere. Well, where are they putting it? They're taking millions of barrels out of one formation and they're reinjecting it into other formations. And if you don't have mechanical integrity in your well bores, those zones become overpressurized and underpressurized. You've got faults and that get lubricated, and you've got wells that are now conduits for pressure, and it's a lot going on. So we need to stop using fresh water to frack, and we need to start recycling our water and coming up with some sort of beneficial use for it.
You mentioned the water as a global management issue, and I couldn't agree more. You know, we had a problem in the Bakken where somebody forgot to carry the one, and all of a sudden we needed 10 times the amount of water, and then I think it even went up to 20 times the amount of water that was originally projected in the Bakken oil field up in North Dakota. And that's a real serious issue because we're talking about water here. And water is, you know, water's cultural.
The next oil.
Well, it's spiritual, it's cultural. And in our neck of the woods, we had a major protest because of water, because of the pipeline. And so people need to understand when it comes to that. Let's talk about the responsibility of certain people, because there are a lot of people getting paid a lot of money to oversee these types of things that you're talking about, these issues. Okay, and I'll just start with the media. You know, I feel like the Crude Life's doing the best that we can for the amount of support we get, the amount of money we've gotten, and et cetera, et cetera. Where are, you know, some other outfits, the national media, the local newspaper, the statewide television network? You know, talk to me. Are the media paying attention to you or not?
Nope. Okay. Not yet. I mean, some do. You know, like I said, a local CBS station's come out. You know, we've had some, Texas Monthly coverage. There's been some other, but no, I mean, right. I think these are really, really big issues. This is big tobacco. This is asbestos, right? And no one wants to talk about it.
Okay, so let's go to the next step. And I agree with you on the big tobacco part. In fact, I've said that a few times in your state to some executives in their offices. And just to give you an idea that this conversation has been continually been tried to be had. So let's talk about the Texas Oil and Gas Commission, or Texas Oil and Gas Association, the Texas Energy Producers Alliance. These are two major oil and gas organizations for the state. And they, you know, they got people that pay dues to protect against things like this and oversee things like this. Have you engaged with them? Have you talked to them? Has anybody talked to you at all about these types of issues?
You know, it's funny. I used to be a member of Texoga, and then after Texoga publicly lobbied the legislature to prevent the legislation that was proposed to fix the grid, I publicly said, I'm canceling my Texoga membership. You no longer represent the interests of Texas oil and gas. You guys are cutting off your nose to spite your face. This is stupid. And just like the NRA has gone crazy on guns, you know, stuff like lots of us mm-hmm. that are really proud Second Amendment people really disagree with the NRA. And it's like these organizations take over. And instead of listening and being holistic, once again, greed gets in the way. The same people are in power. And no, it's very disappointing.
Okay, because that's the number one complaint I've heard in the last year to 2 years is that these organizations that get hundreds of people to give them money, they only take care of a handful, and that's it.
Yep.
They only represent yep. a handful, but they get the money from all kinds of people and have all kinds of weekly or monthly dinners and lunches and parties that you can go and have drinks at and golf at and all kinds of different ways to spend money. You bet. But when it comes to actually supporting and listening and that sort of thing, they ain't got time for that. They're too busy. Too busy.
No. And when we tried to start a nonprofit to plug orphaned wells, because we thought, okay, if there's these jurisdictionally questionable wells where you've got a poor landowner that just doesn't have the resources to help tackle this, that we could help plug these wells. And I was shocked. I shouldn't have been, but I was shocked because I thought that the oil and gas companies would embrace us and be like, yeah, thanks for helping us out. It was like, they can't even acknowledge that there's a problem. So they refuse to give money.
We had the same exact issue with the trees. We were trying, okay, so the industrial forest is a solution to the problem. And okay, so here's, let me just take 5 seconds and tell you about this because we struck out. And that's when we started basically saying, do you not realize you're big tobacco? This was, you know, years ago where we met with about a dozen operators for the industrial forest. Here's the problem. 50% of the trees planted in the United States by nonprofits and by governments, they die within the first year because all they do is they plant them and move on. So what we said is we're going to use industry to solve a problem. We're going to make a critical pipeline system to make sure that these trees get watered every single day for 3 years and then once a week for two years after that. And that will ensure 100% of those trees will live, they'll grow, and we're going to do it with industry, and we're going to build a sustainability shed. So that way, in the colder climates, we can actually have a shed and all kinds of different things. And plus, we can use these innovation with drones and sensors to really create awareness through the whole process. The mayor of Bismarck's on board for a planting party. We're going to have a park. In fact, I'm meeting with them on Monday. We have to actually go outside of the oil and gas industry to do this now because we got rejected by the oil and gas industry. So we actually went in there. We have a city park that we're going to build a forest with industry. We're going to build a forest. Can you believe the amount of attention we're going to get from this?
We'll finally give ourselves good publicity, guys.
Right. But they didn't want anything to do with it.
So don't want to fucking touch it.
Do you know what they did? I'll tell you what. If you get busted screwing up and being unethical with the environment, that's over for the industry. It's over. And the things that I've discovered are worse than the things that you've discovered with those wells. I'll tell you what. Yep. It would make you sick to your stomach. Sorry, I got to step down for a minute there because I put a lot of my heart and soul into the industrial forest. And to go, it was like when I went to those meetings, they wasted my time because it didn't matter what I said. It was predetermined. Yep. It was predetermined before I even walked in there. Look at me. I'm getting excited now. I want to run for office. All right. So what are you running for again? Let's just get back to you.
No, but this is exactly, Jason. I hate politics. This is how it started, right? And it's funny because I've kind of got some non-traditional views on some more, I'm very much fiscally conservative and a little bit more socially liberal. And so some of these bigger GOP types are like, well, how do we know that you're not just using this as a springboard for other office? And I was like, I promise you, if I get elected to this position, I will not, and the Craddocks aren't still in, I won't seek re-election.
I am so tired of that kind of talk. It is just ridiculous. Oh, these people come up with the one percentile of probability and focus on it like it's the main event. My God, I get so tired. Sorry. It just,
no,
Because you know, that's honestly, that's like the strategy. It's like, you know, if we can find something wrong with it and we can kind of all get behind it, then you'll move on and then we can go to our old, you know, we're going to, okay, so I've got another podcast we're doing. It's called the United Podcast of America. You're a podcaster, aren't you?
I used to be, yeah.
You used to be, good enough. As long as you were at one time, you can come on our platform. Because podcasters generally know what they're podcasting about, right? So the United Podcasters of America, that's what we're going to dive into some of these topics because it's getting out of hand. It is just getting out of hand with the trans. Sorry, I got off my soapbox again here. See, you get me going.
I think we are at the. I think this is the first election in U.S. history where we have enough social media and we have enough, ability of access to information to where people are finally starting to not be able to go into one room and say one thing to one group of people, walk out, go into another room and say a completely different thing. And politicians are being called out. My generation's tired of it. You know, those of us in our 30s and 40s are like, no, enough. You know what, boomers, move on. You've screwed it up and we're ready to be maybe make some people mad. And it's okay that everyone doesn't like us, but we've got to be issues based. And when you're regulating oil and gas and you have no real life expertise in those positions of power, that's a really big problem.
How can people find out more about your campaign and donate? Are you taking money from people?
I am not taking money for the primary. I'm going to prove you don't need money. That we can do this through social media and real awareness and word of mouth. And I don't want to be biased. I'm going to prove that I can go in there and do it for the right reasons. So I'm a unicorn. That's the spiel. But yeah, they can go to Sarah4RRC.com. I'm on social media. I am Sarah4RRC on Twitter. I am the unicorn lawyer on TikTok. That's some of my favorite and best content, I believe. And I'm on LinkedIn and all that jazz. So you can find me.
So you really, you just really must like Royal Crown Cola, huh? I'm just kidding. I hear RCC, I'm like Royal Crown Cola. Sorry.
No, yeah, RC Cola and a moon pie, right?
Oh, that's right. See, you do remember it. Okay, never mind. I was kind of dating myself. I had to actually think, is RC Cola even around anymore? So, good luck to you on that, by the way, especially on the primary. I know, how many people are running?
Five.
Okay. And Wayne Christian's the incumbent. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I wish you luck. And I do want to mention to people out there, you know, when it comes to these incumbents, the last time I checked was about a decade ago, but 92% of the incumbents were winning elections. So 92% during the height of the issues in the Soviet Union during the, is it the post-bulletin? I forget what they're probably, anyway, they were 87%. So we're 5% over the re-election rate of incumbents than the Soviet Union was at their height of their corruption. So just keep that in mind, folks out there. I'm not saying anything. I'm just doing a little Freakonomics.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jason. I really enjoyed it.